are you doing, Jeff?
I'm great. How are you?
Very well. Happy Monday.
Happy Monday. As always, Monday's podcast day, and we're back at the Lab 2.0.
And we have some news to discuss and share our opinions. As you guys can probably see from our title, this week is News Roundup for March. We are shooting this at the end of March. I think today is March 27th.
Yep.
We have quite a bit of news. So for today, we are going to talk a little bit about interest rate. We're going to talk a little bit about Bank of Mom and Dad. We're going to talk about Strata, talk a little bit about rent, talk a little bit about Downtown Eastside, talk a little bit about our Canada Line SkyTrain stations and stuff like that. So lots to cover. So why don't we start with the biggest news? Jeff, take it away.
Sounds good. So I think everyone knows where we're going with this. On March 8th, Bank of Canada decided to not increase their interest rate and hold their overnight rate at 4.5%. I'm pretty sure anyone from your grocer to your dry cleaner to your dog probably knows this piece of news. But it's great news because it definitely has a major effect on people buying and selling their property. You and I have both seen that there have been a lot more buyers out there, a lot more multiple offer situations. So as you always say, stability. Who does not like stability?
Right. And I think comes down to what I said last time in one of the podcasts, I think it was Market Update, is that people just want to know what they're dealing with. And when people don't know what they're dealing with, they can't act. Now, the Bank of Canada is basically saying, hey, this is your playing card. Go at it. And then that has kind of resumed the whole sales activity. And on top of that, we've been kind of depressed for about 10 months now. And generally in Vancouver, at least since the start of year 2000, whenever we do get into kind of this lull of real estate, it lasts about 8 months to 10 months, as I previously talked about. Now, one thing I just want to add on to this is obviously the holding of the policy rate is conditional to the economic development.
Yes. Don't think that, hey, now that they announced that they're not holding rates, okay, they're going to start dropping it like back down to 2%. No, that's not what we're saying at all.
Right. Yeah. And the economic development is what really scares me, but it also makes me happy at the same time, depending on obviously what perspective you want to look at. We kind of talked about the fact that, what happened if, I think it was Market Update, what happened if the U.S. continued to kind of increase the interest rate. I think it was actually one of the reels that we put up this morning as well. But I think we have a little update on that as well. Heard of SVB? Hate to kind of pull into the politics, but anyways, long story short, if you mean living under a rock, SVB is Silicon Valley Bank. It filed for bankruptcy after aggressive rate hike in the Feds. I'm not going to get into this long story of how they used to buy bonds, and every time someone takes money out, they lose money and stuff like that. I'm not going to get into that. But ever since the Silicon Valley Bank has failed, the commercial interest rate actually has dropped. Like, I'll put it somewhere here. There's a picture. You can see it. There's a little slight dip. And that decrease of mortgage rate is also another reason why we've been getting so busy ever since that announcement. Because it's not just that Bank of Canada saying, we're not raising rates anymore. It's the Bank of Canada goes, and the commercial bank goes, oh my God, we're going to start lowering rates. So that's kind of what's happening with the whole market right now, is we are experiencing a little dip in mortgage rates right now. So anyone that's thinking about buying, fix it up, fix it for 3 years, and then, you know, congratulations on that.
If you're looking to get into the market, please give us a call.
Exactly. So that's kind of what's happening with the bank, which is all good news, just because we were so worried about the fact that, what happened if the U.S. keeps rising interest rate, then we literally have to throw this off the window, and we're going to have to start rising interest rate as well. But it seems like the reverse has kind of happened. And because of the decrease of interest rate, this is also the reason why even the U.S., the real estate market has been picking back up again. So interesting, very, very interesting. Great news overall. If you're thinking about buying, please talk to us, or at least talk to a bank and lock in your rates there. Second piece of news, I guess it's kind of related. Canadians are confident in their real estate investments. This is coming from Daily Hive Urbanized. Confidence level for real estate is that will outperform financial investments in the next 10 years has reached 36%. That's quite a bit of people. While 24% believe it will be the same, and 12% says that real estate investment will be worse than financial investments in general, like stocks, bonds, and what have you. Interesting. Very, very interesting. And now I'll kind of break it down by age group. 23% of the Gen Z is very, very confident about real estate outperforming financial investments. 16% for people like us, 26% for Gen X, and 23% for the baby boomers.
I think that's very interesting that how our demographic is actually the lowest, but maybe it's because we're in the industry, so we kind of have to be hopeful for the future.
Yes and no. I this is what I want to say in regards to this. I feel like people around our age is the people that literally saw that huge increase in terms of real estate prices mm-hmm. in a very short span of time. And that increase started when we started to hit the workforce.
Yes.
Right? So going up like crazy is all we've seen. Mm-hmm. Like low interest rate environment is all we see. So, and on top of that, we see homes that went from 200,000 now worth 600,000. Mm-hmm. So in the back of our, I think, at least in the back of my mind, when I talk to my friends and stuff like that, the common topic is how far more can this go up?
Yes.
Like how far more? Now compare that to Gen X and baby boomers, like they bought their house for like, what, 100,000? Mm-hmm. Now it's worth 6 million. So they know and they have experienced the fact that there is no upper limit and how far, how quickly this can go.
Yeah. Anything can happen. I remember my grandpa probably bought a detached house 30 something years ago for 400K, and I think it was like they sold it for $1.5 million.
Yeah, and I bet you right now it's probably worth like 2-3 mil.
Probably, yeah. That's in Richmond.
And that's exactly what I'm saying is that they saw that, and then they probably went through, they probably had a time in their minds like, this can't keep going up like this, right? But it did, it just kept going up. And of course that now they're just kind of like, whoa, well, there's no upper limit.
Sky's the limit.
Yeah. For us, like, we didn't see that. Like, you know, we didn't see the like, you know, struggling at about 100,000 and then all of a sudden it goes up. All we saw was catching the wave that goes up. So in the back of our mind, it's just like, ugh, how much more? Like, I can't even afford this anymore. How much more can I actually go up? Whereas the Gen Z, I feel like is like, they already, like, ever since they got out to the workforce, the real estate price is already at this level. So they're already so accustomed to it. They don't know what it feels like when a one-bedroom condo was worth $200,000 in Vancouver.
Not only that, I also feel like this, nowadays, it's way easier to make money online. And that's why maybe they're thinking like, yeah, it's going to keep going up because everyone's making more money. In their mind, everyone is making more money.
Did they sell the NFT for like $1 million profit?
No, it was a child YouTube star who made $6 million in 2022.
Oh my God. But talking about this, the next portion of the conversation of the article goes, 31% of Vancouver residents is more likely to buy a primary residence in compared to before. Gen Z sits at 34%, and people like us sits at 33%, being the biggest group of people who's going to be buying. Makes sense. I mean, we're the people that's going to get into families, that's going to have divorces, that's going to have death. Like, we are the next group. We're the next one up. Right? We're the biggest consumer group going forward. Like, our parents are all retired and they're not spending any more money. They're cashing out on their investment, going to bonds, going to term deposits. It's us. Like, the economy is really up to us. Well, Gen Z and us, I guess, going forward.
Time to put up your grown-up pants.
Yep, and make it work.
Next up here, we have number of mortgage-free homes in Vancouver is over 50%. Why? Okay, number one, obviously, is foreign money.
Oh, man, are we seriously going down this road?
All the foreign investors are throwing their money into Vancouver and driving the real estate prices up. Oh. I'm being a low-key sarcastic.
That can't be the only reason, right?
It's interesting that in Burnaby and Richmond, 45% of people own their homes without a mortgage. In BC, Surrey had the most mortgages, with 32% being mortgage-free. And Langley had a higher number of mortgages as well, with 35% owning without a mortgage. With a mortgage. Sorry, Joe had a typo.
Yeah, I had a typo there.
I mean, this kind of makes sense, you know? Just so the story that I had with my grandfather, he bought like 30 years ago.
Yeah.
And of course, he's living mortgage-free. And who gets to enjoy the benefits? It's the future generation.
Right.
Whereas the people that are like, you know, you and I are just entering or have entered the workforce, have literally got an education, got a good job. What's the next step? You buy a property. And what's affordable right now? Places like Surrey, Langley, where you can buy a condo for like 300K, 400K. Whereas if you're looking in Richmond, you're at least like 500-600 for anything decent.
And I feel like this is very standard city development. Like if you go to Europe, you go to Asia, you will always realize closer towards the city center, it's always the people who I like to call the older money, who's been there for a really long time, and people who is just coming up, especially if they don't come from a rich family, that they have to start buying from the outwards area because it's cheaper. And then as they upgrade in life, they start to slowly move into the city.
Ideally.
Right? Ideally. Mm-hmm. Ideally. So this all kind of adds up.
Of course. And it makes perfect sense because the top five include Kerrisdale, West Point Grey, Arbutus Ridge, and Shaughnessy, all under 61%, with Dunbar Southlands following closely at 59%. So again, old money, they bought, what are the, 50, 60 years ago, their home has appreciated like, I don't even know how many percent.
So probably went from like $250,000 all the way up to like $6 million now if this did a little upkeep and did some improvements on it, right? That's what I'm trying to say is like, the obviously when you're talking about this area here, it's either the new rich money or the old rich money.
Yes.
And the people who are literally trying to make it there, they're not buying this area yet. They will only start to buy this area when they made it. Mm-hmm. And when they made it is when they probably don't need as much mortgage or they don't need mortgages at all. Right?
It's funny because most of the people that I'm working with who are, you know, just immigrated here, they are looking at places without a mortgage because they already made their money outside of this country and then now they want to retire here.
That all makes sense. All makes sense. And obviously people in Surrey and Langley, those are the people that maybe they don't have a rich parent or what have you. And maybe during COVID time, they had a one bedroom, which they saved up and worked really hard for. And then now because of COVID, they decided to move outwards towards, you know, the exterior part of Greater Vancouver, put on more debt, put on more mortgages for their families and stuff like that. Right. It's interesting that we put this one in second because that will immediately link to our next article that we want to talk about is for people that want to buy in Greater Vancouver, bank of mom and dad is now being extremely crucial component to this home purchasing.
I love how like this term is now like literally an official term, bank of mom and dad. I remember us like just talking about this like 6-7 months ago in one of our earlier podcasts.
Yeah, no, it's funny and I guess it's the norm. Like, let's just see what the article says. Zolo found that 47% of Canadians receive money from a family or inheritance to boost their down payment. An additional 24% uses their partner's family's money as a down payment. Oh, so what does that tell you? Well, that really tells you that if you're working in Vancouver and you don't have some sort of money or inheritance or money from other areas, it's going to get really, really, really difficult because you're competing with half the people out there who's buying right now are all receiving money from the family for their down payments, or maybe not just down payment, maybe straight cash. Right? So I'm on the latter group. I'm not the front group where I just have money if I just do this. I get it because this is where some people might start to feel really uneven as well because they work so hard, they save, but then they can't compete with the people. It's like no subject to financing. I can do 50% down. Here's 40% deposit for this contract and stuff like that.
Yes, and these people are already families who earn over 100K in income. They're probably dual income as well. Both mom and dad are working and they're still only buying places in Surrey, Langley and stuff like that. If they want to get into that West Side market, it's very, very tough to compete.
I mean, last time I went to UBC to check up a 2-bedroom condo and I was just chatting with the listing agent and the listing agent said, yeah, the husband is a doctor and the wife is a nurse and they're living in an 800 square foot condo in UBC. That tells you a little bit about like, you know, what's happening there. All right. So very, very interesting. And for the people that does have the bank of mom and dad, you know, really, really, really be thankful because just imagine that if you don't and that uphill battle is extremely, extremely difficult. So that's all I'm going to say. Other couple of points about this article is another fascinating insight is that 49% of Gen Z like to browse properties on Instagram. That really differs from other generations, like people like us, the boomers, the Gen X, where we like to use real estate websites like REW, the realtor's personal websites and stuff like that.
I don't think I've ever seriously looked at real estate on Instagram. Like what I see are the reels that show like, oh wow, like a big fancy detached house in Texas only costs 400K US or 200K US, but never like seriously browsing. Like I still obviously use, oh, for us, like MLS, but all the clients that I talk to, they look at REW, realtor.ca. It's interesting that the youngest generation is only going to Instagram. So I guess our reels are working.
Well, I'm I'm just going to say because you're not a Gen Z. No, no, no. All jokes aside. Yeah, I'm shocked myself as well, but I get it. I mean, we push quite hard on social media, hence the whole podcast and everything like that. It really is for the generation that would accept all of this. And I realize that people who take podcasts, who likes to listen to YouTube shorts or, you know, TikTok and stuff like that are generally the Gen Zs. And once again, they are coming up to that working class or getting into the workforce, and they are going to be one of the biggest people who's going to be buying down the future. Right? So can't forget about these people. Gen Zs aren't babies anymore. They're coming strong. Honestly, they're coming strong. They are next.
They are already adults.
Yeah, they're adults. They are next. Mm-hmm. Like, we are about to be past tense.
We are not getting any younger.
No, we are not. And another fact from this article, which is less surprising, is that a large number of Canadians use borrowed money to buy homes, like through a line of credit or through inheritance or from bank of mom and dad. And how is that linked towards a previous article? Well, if you are fortunate enough to be born with in a stable family where your parents had a house, maybe on the west side or on the east side, doesn't matter, and they had it for like 40, 50, 60 years, the chance of you needing a mortgage is probably really low. Let me break it down for you. Let's say my parents bought in Oak Ridge back in the 70s for about $300,000. Let's assume that they never sold it, because we sold it very quickly afterwards. Let's assume that they never sold it. Now that same house, if they just do a quick touch up, is probably worth like $5 million. Okay, so they pure profited $4 point something million. They will take that 4 point something million plus the down payment of $400,000 for the house, so $5 million. They will spend $2 million on a condo for them to downsize. They'll spend $900,000 they'll keep another $2 million for their retirement. And then the rest of the $1 million, they'll just give it to the kid and be like, go buy yourself a real estate.
Cash. Thanks, mom and dad.
Right? So that also plays into the number of people that lives in the city core that has less, that the percentage of people having mortgage being a lot less. Because not just that they're working hard and stuff like that, it's also because they are fortunate enough that their mom and dad can literally just sell that house that they were in, and then they don't even need to deal with mortgage ever again at all. Right? And then there is still more left over.
Yes.
That's the key thing. All right, so that is that.
It's kind of interesting how this ties in even to the next article here about strata managers, because it's a trickle effect.
Yes.
That $900,000, what are they buying? They're definitely not buying a detached house anywhere in Vancouver.
Right.
They are definitely buying a stratified property.
Mm-hmm.
Condo, maybe a really trashy duplex, and where they, you know, cough up some of their own money towards a mortgage.
Yep.
And definitely they need strata managers.
Yeah.
And in this article here, it says that there are only about 300 to 500 strata managers in all of BC. And we could use another 300 tomorrow in order to get us to where we need to be.
Mm-hmm.
With 1.5 million people living in stratas and only 1,400 strata managers Canada-wide, this is a very, very big problem, and this is a couple of reasons why. We're also assuming that not all of these licensees are actively working.
Just not all realtors are actively in the market.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And we know some agents that maybe do one or two deals a year, and they're perfectly happy. So,
So as of right now, BC is literally running on 50% capacity. Mm-hmm. So if you're a real estate agent, you're listening to our podcast, thank you so much. But now you also understand, We quickly mentioned this about several months ago, but now you also understand why the strata managers are just so not responsive.
Well, let's just say they're tough to get a hold of sometimes.
Yes. So a lot of people, agents, sometimes myself included, we blame the strata manager. But this article right here, wherever you want to put it, it explains the situation very, very, like very, very much in detail on why they can't respond to you on the proper timing, why they sometimes, like I had this deal where I asked the strata manager a question, I emailed it to him, we didn't hear back, I figure out another way to get the answer, we removed the subject, we complete it, we have the keys, we already moved in, and then the strata manager got back to me.
Wonderful.
Right.
And I know it's frustrating, especially for clients like buyers, sellers, as well as like, you know, realtors, but we got to be a little bit more compassionate about what they're dealing with. Like we already mentioned that, hey, there's a shortage, but this is how bad the shortage is.
Yeah.
there's about 34,000 strata corporations in the province. With a little bit of simple math there, that means that there's 68 stratas that every single manager is managing.
And that's assuming every single one of them is actually working. Because yes. I know realtors that are like Pokemon trainers that likes to catch them all. And what I mean is that not only do they have the trading services license, they have the property management license, and they also have the strata manager license and the real estate brokerage license.
Don't forget the rental.
Well, yeah, all of them, right? But they know that trading services and property management is the one that's going to make them the most amount of money. Mm-hmm. So they just got the strata and they just left it on the side, right? And that's on top of, in this article, it says that just like any other industry in the first world country, we are getting into a point where we're running out of people that's willing to work. Mm-hmm. So a third of these strata managers that we're talking about, that's between the 300 to 500, a third of them is going to retire in the next 5 years. And right now, there is a lack of stream of new ones getting into this field. Mm-hmm. So this problem is only going to get worse. Mm-hmm. And like what you told me in this article is that we're lucky already because BC is the only province that one strata manager can deal with multiple buildings. Mm-hmm. Other provinces is a one-to-one kind of thing.
Which makes total sense because you would expect that your manager is on site daily. However, if we have a system like that, you know what that means. It's going to cost more money. Mm-hmm. And where's that money going to come from? It's obviously going to come from everyone who's living in that building. Meaning your strata fee is going to go from anywhere from 50 to 70 cents all the way up to a dollar or even over a dollar. You and I even talked about this. In Ontario, it's already over a dollar.
It's already over a dollar. Right. And back then, honestly, back then when I was initially in the industry, I was naive enough to be like, oh, it's just because Toronto weather is, it's more extreme. Mm. They need more heating and they need more cooling. I never wrap my head around, oh yeah, maybe I should really consider how their strata manager works because mm-hmm. theirs is one-to-one. So that means that if the strata manager is paying this guy, let's say $100,000, he's only taking care of this one building. Mm-hmm. That's one contract. Whereas in BC, they could probably pay this guy $100,000, but then the company could sign like six contracts.
Six? I think more like 16.
Or 68, based on the numbers.
Or 68. So, you know, let's look at what's going to be done about this. Well, before that, I honestly, in my stratified property, I have gone through five agents in the last 5 years. But the one that I have most recently, his name's Jeffrey Wang, and we're with AWM. He's like a really, really responsive. I've had two or three different issues that I've had to get addressed, and he replied within 12 hours.
Shout out to Jeff.
Shout out to Jeff.
Yeah. No, and then it's the same for my condo that I bought. It's a pre-sale when I bought it in Richmond, and it's been about 6-7 years. I think I already have four different strata managers, right? So this is obviously an issue.
High stress.
It's very, now that—
Overworked.
Yeah, now that we put 68. Listener, if you had to deal with 68 buildings, are you not gonna be stressed? Are you? So that kind of explains to me, number one, their response time, number two, sometimes their attitude. You know, the ones that, not all of them are bad, but some of them are like, whoa, okay, yeah. What did I do to you? Mm-hmm. I didn't hit your car or something mm-hmm. like that. And of course, number three is just being able to understand, like, look, in BC, this is what we have chosen. That's why our strata fee is lower than other places. Mm-hmm. But why we're bringing this up is also letting people know that this is not going to be a long-term solution either.
No, because more and more people are going to be living in stratified properties, meaning we actually need more strata managers, not less. And it seems like we're getting less and less every year. I mean, what does a strata manager get paid right now? Anywhere from 50 to 100K. That's what this article says.
That's right.
50. But for me personally, that wouldn't be enough incentive for me to take on the stress of managing a whole building that costs millions and millions of dollars. I mean, they're in charge of helping the strata corporation manage their budget, making sure that their maintenance and everything is on schedule, and also dealing with all the complaints of every single owner in there.
Yeah, so I just want to add up, everything that you said is absolutely correct. Just to add on what you said, this is the same phenomenon that's happening with our paramedics within BC. Mm-hmm. Low pay, high stressed, right? And it's just people are unwilling to do it.
But at least as a paramedic, there's also pride in your work. I mean, you're saving lives here, but as a strata manager, you're staring at a building every day and dealing with like inpatient people.
Right. Or yeah, like tenants or landlords. And yeah, anyways, I totally get it. So I think what's going to happen is two things gonna happen, I feel like. Number one, I feel like the whole strata manager, this whole thing is gonna be more reliant on AI. I know I've been looking into AI like recently and stuff like that, but there's a reason why I'm doing it, because I feel like our industry is going to get impacted quite heavily, just like a lot of other industries as well for AI. Because if they can if they can get AI to do a lot of the miscellaneous work, then they could actually have the strata manager deal more efficiently with more buildings. The second thing I'm going to see right now, at this point right now, is strata fees will also continue to increase in the future, because if less people is willing to do this, but the demand is there, what do we say about price? I mean, it's the same idea as real estate. You have less supply, less strata manager, but you have more demand, more high-rise buildings, they all need stratas. And we also ban stratas from banning rentals. So self-manage is going to be more of a more difficult thing in the future as well. So they definitely need more strata managers to be able to assist them and stuff like that. What do you think is going to happen to salary? What do you think is going to happen to price? Right now, the article says they get paid 55 to 100 depending on difficulty, size of the stratas and stuff like that. I can imagine 5 years from now, after a third of them leaves, it's not going to be 55 to 100. It's going to be like 100 to 150 easily because of simple supply and demand. Right, so if you are a upcoming looking for a career, you like a stable lifestyle, you like your Monday to Friday, something to think about.
Yeah, not only that, and I think right now there's a lot of corporations that are actually incentivizing people to join their team by compensating you that $1,000 you need to pay towards getting certified, and they'll reimburse you once you complete it and you join the team.
Right, right, right. So
you can basically get into that career for free is what I'm trying to say.
Right, yes. And then once, of course, you're in with your experience, your salary just starts to come up and stuff like that. And hopefully the whole AI thing, if it does come into fruition, will really help put the amount of stress, lower the amount of stress. Because while I was looking at this article, I scrolled all the way down to the comments. The first comment is, because this job is very stressful.
That's definitely a strata manager replying.
So I thought that was actually pretty funny. Since we're talking about strata, let's now that we're done, let's move on to the next topic, which is downtown West Side and single Kitsilano rental buildings to be torn down for more single detached houses. So it's almost the reverse.
A bit of a controversial topic, I think.
That's right. So let's just break it down. A downtown building with the address of 1511 Barclay Street is to be demolished and built for a single family home. The whole article started going to the West End is still doing some single family houses here. The comments and everything is kind of really split into half. One half of it is great. West Side should keep its uniqueness, that characteristics. So let's keep these single family houses. Maybe just give them a quick update and stuff like that. The other half, you can imagine, is literally going, excuse my language, why the fuck are we still building single family houses in the downtown peninsula? We are having an affordability problem. And downtown is not going to get any bigger. We're surrounded by Falls Creek and the water. We can only go east. So there is a finite set of land in downtown Vancouver. It's one of the beauties of downtown Vancouver. Why are we doing this? Right. So you can kind of see where kind of the big debate is. Since I'm here, let me ask you, where are you in this picture?
The whole time I was reading this article, I was really just thinking about the movie Up. And you know what? My heart really goes out to those types of situations where people want to preserve the past and the history. But I also feel like the only constant in life is change, meaning things will never stop changing. And with this particular situation, we just have to get with the times. It's okay if you want to have like some historical sites here and there. I think that's beautiful. And especially when you only have a few of those in the downtown core, it brings even more attraction and beauty to it.
Right.
But look, they're building a new 60-story high-rise. We just went to the presentation center for that in the West End. I think that's the direction that we need to go, because we need a place to house all the immigrants that are here, and also everyone who's having kids, and the kids are all grown up, and we all need a place to live too.
And COVID is over, and people are expected to go back to downtown for work.
Exactly. So I think given the situation of what the demand is, we need to do the right things right now, which is increase the density.
Fair enough. I agree with you. I just want to add, who's going to be buying that single family house?
Yeah, remember? Like, what's that going to cost? It's going to be like $6 million to like live in a detached house in the downtown.
In downtown Florida. Vancouver? You remember when we were just talking about this with the topic about Taiwan? Yes. How you're in the market and all of a sudden there's a single
detached. I hate that shit. I saw that, I was like, what? It made no sense to me. And maybe that's my programming and that's my own personal opinion. Yeah. You know, everything that we talk about here is our personal opinion. But I really think that that is what the city needs.
No, I agree. I totally agree. I'm with you 100%.
And I also feel like the people that are in the comment section that are saying like, no, we need to preserve it, they're not the people that are living in those places anyways.
Yeah, no. I'm pretty sure they're like the person that lives right next to it that doesn't want the view to get blocked because they're going to be building a high rise.
There you go. They're in the low rise next door that does not want a new high rise to be built because it'll directly impact them.
Right. Which, I don't know, I can't imagine living in a single detached house and then like literally there's a 60-story high-rise right beside you. Just in the amount of cigarette butts that's gonna come. You're not even supposed to smoke on your balcony, but I can just imagine the amount of garbage and debris that's just gonna come right into your unit. Shocking. Shocking. Anyways, so that's the downtown one. The Kitsilano one, it's a little, I think it's, this one, I think it makes sense. Is the situation is that there's an 8-unit rental housing to be turned into 3 single-family houses. The 3 single-family houses will most likely house 6 families, assuming that they're going to be building rental suites down there. Mm-hmm. Houses are expected to have about 3,500 square foot. So yeah, definitely some sort of rental suite downstairs. For the ones in the center, about 3,800 square foot for the ones on the side. Now, obviously, this is a huge debate on why we're doing this because this is so inconsistent if you compare it to the redevelopment, the scene redevelopment that's literally a few blocks down, which is a partnership between the city and obviously the Squamish First Nation Band, where they want to build high rises to house homes and offices and stuff like that. Yeah, so it's just, every time I talk to a builder, this is what they say, that Vancouver zoning, rezoning, applications for teardowns and stuff like that has no consistency whatsoever. It's one of the main reasons why they're so frustrated.
Yes.
And this is probably another example of it. It's like, do you want this area to be high rises or do you want this area to be kept as single family houses? Like, what does the city actually want? Or what do you want, city official? Because I have heard, and I'm not a developer, so this is just my opinion, is that depending on which person that you talk to within the city hall, they'll all give you different answers and different requirements, which they're just like, what? Wait, I thought this is very straightforward. They're like, yes, you can do this, or no, you cannot do that.
No, I have one word for this, cluster. Like, I have no idea what's going on here, and I'm a little bit skeptical about whether or not there's actually gonna be 6 families here, because if I have the money to build a single family home,
in like, Kids Point, out of anywhere, too.
I don't think I would be living with a tenant.
True. Yeah. And I can't even say they're building duplexes because the article says 3 single family homes.
Yeah.
So I'm...
It's very contradicting to, yeah, exactly what the city has been saying about, like, oh, we're going to increase density and allow these, like, 6-plexes or whatever to come up.
Yeah. And then on the flip side, you're having the West End building single family houses, and then you're having Kitsilano tearing down rental buildings, stratified buildings into single family houses.
I can see where this would cause frustration from all perspectives.
Please, as a listener, we would love to hear what you think about this this decision here. It is just so interesting. Next, right over here, a little bit closer towards home. Our home, at least. SkyTrain, Caption SkyTrain Station is set to open in fall.
You said it's a little bit closer to home. It's not really, because I feel like from Capson to get to Vancouver is closer to than Capson to get to your house.
Fine.
Steveston is, I don't even consider it to be in like Richmond anymore. You're like on a lone little island.
It's just like White Rock is not part of Surrey. No. Like Port Moody is not part of Coquitlam. But anyways, as you guys can see here, Capson's SkyTrain station is set to open in fall of 2023. It was initially planned for summer of 2023, but now it's been changed to fall of 2023. I literally wrote right here, not bad.
Not bad, not bad. And you know what? That actually does kind of sum it up, because from summer to fall is not bad in terms of delays.
Yeah.
And now, is it going to announce in another couple months and be like, oh, we're going to be fall to winter? Okay, we'll see.
Oh, we'll see on that, right? Mm-hmm. I guess, first of all, congratulations for all the homeowners around that Capson area. If you're a homeowner in the Pinnacle buildings, you're a homeowner in Congo Garden, you're homeowners, I guess ViewStar and just everything kind of around it, congrats. Your patience is about to pay off. Mm-hmm. Second of all, I always thought that this is very interesting because obviously we have friends, we have clients that lives around that neighborhood, and they're always kind of like, this is kind of like in the middle of nowhere. Mm-hmm. Like I'm 12 minutes away from Aberdeen SkyTrain station, and I'm like 12 minutes away from Bridgeport station, right? Well, it's the reason why, and a lot, some of them will even ask me when they start to shop, is like, why is there a heck of a bunch of high rises here? Mm-hmm. Like it just makes no sense.
There's obviously because everyone loves Richmond Sushi, Supermarket 2000 and all the bubble tea shops.
I love my meat fresh.
And Canadian Tire.
There you go. And Johan and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. But really, that's not the reason. This whole SkyTrain station was planned since the beginning. Mm-hmm. So obviously, they let the developer do it, build up the neighborhood first before they put in the station. Because they want to make sure the demand is there before they provide the supply. Mm-hmm. Because there's quite a bit of money. Right? And the second thing is, I really like how they got the funding for this. I really do. Mm-hmm. The other reason why they want the master plan community to finish building first is because if you're a resident of Richmond, you don't have to be angry about this. Nobody's touching your tax money. Mm-hmm. Because this whole station was funded by the developers that's building around the area. I believe they submitted about $32 million in donation, and the rest of the $20 million, I believe, was done by TransLink.
That makes me very happy.
None like, you know, where you live, where I live, apparently we did not even donate a penny into this station. Mm-hmm. But we get to reap the benefits of it.
No, right? We just pay money towards the government that's bailing TransLink out. No, just like a different way.
Oh, no, I just thought that it's just very, very nice. When I was selling in that neighborhood before I became an agent, I didn't know that for every single home that was sold, the developer had to donate several thousand dollars to the city for this particular station. Mm-hmm. I like it. Let the people who's gonna reap the benefit pay for it. That's fair. What I'm saying. Fair enough, right? Okay, enough with residential. Let's shift our gear a little bit and let's talk about retail spaces. Mm-hmm. This article here, 1 in 10 storefronts in Vancouver's high street is now vacant. With a strong recovery in employment rates in BC since COVID-19, it's kind of interesting to see how we're having such a high percentage of vacant retail spaces. Mm-hmm. Before I even get any further, this report is extremely contradicting to some of the other reports that Collier has produced earlier this year, saying that there's roughly about a 4% or 5% vacancy in Greater Vancouver. Mm-hmm. As a whole. I guess I'll kind of share with you guys, this shouldn't be a surprise. Some of the highest vacancy rates for retail spaces around Greater Vancouver, Hastings Crossings is sitting at 28%, mm-hmm. Dunbar Village is sitting at 17.8%, Point Grey Village is sitting at 17.5%, and Strathcona is sitting at 16.9%.
Mm-hmm. Sounds like two opposite ends of the spectrum when you compare Strathcona to a place like Point Grey.
Yeah, and from this, I wrote right here, it's like, you know, it's pretty obvious what is the killer of retail storefronts, the neighborhood itself, mm-hmm. and the rent. Because that's literally what it is, right? Mm-hmm. Imagine trying to have imagine having a vape shop in Hastings Crossing.
Well, I mean, the amount of vandalism there, the amount of migrants, like we talk about downtown Eastside, how crazy it is, and we will talk about that in a little bit, mm-hmm. and all these store owners are actually closing down their businesses.
Right.
They're not opening new businesses. How can they survive?
Like, I think it's just like their insurance is probably like off the rockers because like they have break-ins, they have glass, like window smashes, fires.
Yeah.
I can, like, that's all cost. Like people don't understand that's all cost ultimately for the small business owners. Mm-hmm. Right? And obviously on the flip side is Dunbar Village and Point Grey Village. Mm-hmm. First of all, let me ask you, what is the anchor tenant for these two areas?
In Dunbar, it's obviously Dunbar Theater and Shoppers Drug Mart.
Dunbar Theater's still around. Oh, yeah, it is still around. The Shoppers Drug Mart, I know, is still around.
Yeah, I think those are the only two things that I remember. Everything else, I was like in a little strip mall, the Mexicali that I love going to, the Max, it's all got torn down and they're building low-rises or mid-rises.
And that probably explains it. Mm-hmm. And on the flip side, with home evaluations and land evaluations has skyrocketed in the last little bit, you can imagine that the property taxes also have risen quite a bit. And once again, landowners, they don't want to pay for that. They're going to pass that cost right down to the tenants or for the business owners. Mm-hmm. And you don't have that much demand, but then your cost is going up. What the heck is going on there?
It's really sad to see news like this to me because, you know, a lot of people, their dream is to become an entrepreneur and like own their own business. However, it's just not the dream that they envisioned.
Right.
And that's the reality of it.
Yeah.
And like not to mention like how e-commerce has killed a lot of retail shops in recent years.
That's right. That's right. And of course, you know, for them, Dunbar and Point Grey is, I purposely asked you that question, is like, what do you even remember from those areas?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because I'll continue the article. The lowest rental vacancy is actually Kerrisdale.
Mm-hmm.
But people will be like, what's Kerrisdale? Isn't that very close to Point Grey? Isn't that very close to Dunbar Village? But here's the thing. When I tell people Kerrisdale City Center, people actually remember the stuff that's there. The McDonald's, the ice rink, the hills. We're just talking about this.
Yeah, all the bubble tea shops, Kerrisdale Community Center, the camera store, that sushi store, a liquor store. People actually congregate there.
Yeah. And I think geographically it also plays a factor just because you are kind of right in the middle of Vancouver. Well, Vancouver West Side, at least.
Yeah, you're 15 minutes to downtown, 15 minutes to UBC, or maybe 10 minutes to UBC, and like 15 minutes to Richmond.
Yeah, and I just to add on it, I talked to obviously my clients and stuff like that. I realized for Kerrisdale it's such a unique place because people from Point Grey goes there. People from Kitsilano goes there. People from Marple goes there. People from Southland goes there. People from UBC goes there. I know people from the east side that goes there just to go see their family doctor, their optometrist, their dentist, or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just an area I feel like it's not so big that is so commercialized that all the residents are like, oh, I don't want to deal with this. Crime, dirt, rat, rodent, whatever, what have you.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not so small like Dunbar Village or Hastings Crossing is just like, what's even around? Like, why do I need to come here? I'd rather go somewhere else where I could do four or five things at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
And so I feel like that's kind of, another thing I guess is just for Kerrisdale, I think just that neighborhood itself, there's that appeal to it as well. And just to add on, this is before the revitalization of the Arbutus Walk Greenway and all that stuff. So it's kind of interesting, even though we're talking about, you know, higher, nicer areas also has this problem, but apparently Kerrisdale does not.
I think it also attracts a lot of people because, you know, Crofton is in Kerrisdale, Point Grey is in Kerrisdale, McGee is in Kerrisdale, Prince of Wales is like not that far away.
And we all know who's paying those $6-7 million houses on the west side. It's for their kids, right?
Yes.
And after Kerrisdale, here's the most shocking. As for number two, after Kerrisdale, West Broadway. Didn't we, last news roundup, we just had a 20-minute segment talking about how West Broadway, SkyTrain station, construction, people are complaining, shops are closing. I still remember that lady from the subway and all that stuff. This is obviously telling about something else.
No, because we were talking about West Broadway and Canby. I think this article is more referring to the South Granville area. Canby and Granville. Broadway and Granville.
Yeah.
So Broadway all the way up to maybe 12th Avenue, for maybe 16th. I can already think of how busy it is in comparison to Canby. Canby, the traffic over there is just like really, really, really bad. And also parking, I think, is very poor.
Yes.
But there's a lot more parking options, number one. So accessibility, I think, is really important to people. And number two, I can already think of the Stanley Theater. I can start with Indigo Chapters. There's a Cactus Club there. There's a lot of small retail shops. There's a lot of furniture shops.
No, makes sense. Anchor tenant is what we're talking about. Like memorable anchor tenants and enough shops for people to actually have a purpose to go there because they can do four or five things at the same time. Right. So, and I guess if you go, not just that, if you go a little bit further down, say by McDonald and Broadway, that's a bumping area. Tim's Salon is there. Our friend's salon is there. He's bumping. Like construction hasn't impacted all the way down there because the UBC portion obviously hasn't been confirmed yet. So I can see, I'm still a little shocked. But Anyways, next, here is then the next three areas with the least amount of vacant storefronts. Yale Town, makes sense. It's Yale Town, right? Commercial, makes sense. It's bumping there. I love the food around Commercial Drive. I do. It's nice and it serves a huge population of the Vancouver East Side people.
Hipster town.
Hipster town, right? Mm-hmm. And to end everything off, West End. I love those Korean and Japanese restaurants.
Yeah,
I mean, right by Demen, Robson.
Yep, all the ramen shops. I definitely love them.
I like how we're turning this into a food podcast. But anyway,
so can you tell we're getting a little bit hungry?
Yes, right, it's about 3 o'clock in the afternoon. We're getting a little hungry.
Why don't we wrap this up with the last article? Unless you have anything to add.
No, that's pretty much about it. I just feel it's so interesting. I just felt that whole thing. It's literally happening to the best neighborhood and also happening to the worst neighborhood.
Yes.
Where all these vacant storefront is happening. But take it away with our last piece of news that we want to discuss.
Okay, Downtown Eastside response plan to create 330 new homes by June of 2023. Now, obviously, this encompasses a lot of social issues. Real estate, because, you know, in those areas, with the amount of homeless people there, it does definitely impact residents who live in that area and also business owners.
Right.
And the Minister of Housing, Ravi, here says, everyone in Downtown Eastside deserves a safe, stable, and supportive place to call home. Over the past several months, we've led work with Indigenous community and government partners to develop a coordinated response plan to help people get off the streets and into homes, and make the Downtown Eastside a healthier, safer, and more hopeful place for everyone. As safety concerns increase, we are urging people to take up the offers of indoor spaces that are available right now as we continue to open long-term housing. Sounds like a very political answer, but I really want to highlight this part, is that it sounds like there are a number of people who are there that do not want to take up the offer of safe indoor places. For whatever reason, they are happy where they are. And I think it's very important for us to remember. It's easy to say, oh, wow, these people, drug addicts, all of them, get them off the streets, ship them somewhere, get them out of Vancouver. It's terrible. They're a stain on the local community. However, each of these people are actually people and have different stories and different backgrounds and different wants and desires. We have no idea how they ended up where they were. Maybe they made one wrong decision and it changed the course of their life forever.
Right.
And I'm happy to see that, you know, here it says since July, 90 people have moved into safe housing and about 170 people are sheltered on East Hastings and 70 have expressed interest in safe housings. I personally feel like that 117 is a severe understatement. Last time I drove through Hastings, and you guys can correct me if I'm wrong, I feel like there was more like 300 people there.
I agree. When I read the article when you shared this with me, I was like, 117? Like, what is this, like half a block? Right? Like, I'm laughing, but I'm not really laughing about it as well. So, I feel like there's definitely more. And I guess just to add on what you just said before you start to talk about the numbers, is we once again, we are urging people to take up the offer. So, obviously, there's more supply than demand. So that means that it's not a problem that, oh, let's just build more social housings. It will help, but it's not the answer, the only answer.
Yes.
It's a combination of a lot of stuff. A lot of these people, they also need to relearn how to get back into society. Mm-hmm. They've been out of it for a really long time. And not just that, like how to make proper connections, how to not just do drugs every single day. There's so many different factors psychologically, socially, that it's not just like, oh, let's just build more homes and shove them all into it.
Yes, and I'm not going to pretend like I know exactly what they're going through, but to me, one perspective could be, hey, the system is what failed them. The system is what allowed them to be there in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
So why would they then trust that the system is here to help you? Oh, come here. You're going to be safe in these houses.
Yeah.
Really? Well, there's also two complete polar sides of drug addicts. Some people don't really have a choice. They just got hooked on it.
Yeah.
There's also violent people and, you know, sex offenders who are also drug users. And why would they want to be put into the same building?
Right.
That's another thing that I don't think the government fully considers. And I'm really hoping that there will be more programs put into place to help rehabilitate them and reintegrate them into society, should they choose to, or at least give them like some sense of hope that there's like something better out there.
Right. With that being said, I think this is a good start. Having the supply as the first step, because real estate takes time. program takes time as well, but this obviously having this area that's available for them first, and then as we start to implement the programs to really get them out of the mental anxiety, depressions, whatever they're dealing with, get them out of that space. Mm-hmm. And then these areas, these rooms that they're building will become very meaningful because it will be the step that they, it will be the first step of the recovery and stuff like that, right? So
I think the last thing I want to add is that, you know, even as local Vancouver residents for you and I, there's just a bit of a sense of pride that like, I want these people to get the help that they need so that I don't feel like, oh, I have to tell people, clients, friends, oh, avoid this area because it's not safe. When Vancouver is consistently marketed as one of the most beautiful places in the planet to live in.
Yes. Personal stories. Like, this is obviously before COVID, but I still remember just before COVID, I think it was about 6 years ago, my parents came and, you know, I was working. They decided to take the SkyTrain down to Waterfront Station because they just want to walk around downtown Vancouver. Mm. I think they got up and took the wrong turn. And I still remember my mom and my dad called me quickly. It's like, oh my God, we're lost. I don't know where we are. And this looks very dangerous. And I'm like, oh, do you see the clock tower? They didn't even get as far as the clock tower, the steam clock tower in Gastown. Imagine if my parents walked past the clock tower and what they're going to see.
And this was already years ago.
This is
6 years. Imagine that happening now.
Yeah. So it's, long story short, you know, we just really hope that there is a solution to this. I really hope we are going to work our way more towards like Sweden and not like LA. I'm just really hoping because it's such a beautiful city. Our parents came here for a reason, right? And I just don't want the lack of proactiveness to ruin the city just because.
And we're not throwing this all on the city. I mean, at the end of the day, all these programs, everything, it takes resources and it takes money. But who's going to pay for it? It's the people who are living in Vancouver.
Yeah.
But try raising taxes even more. You know, you're going to have freaking riots.
That's the thing. And it's almost the same concept as don't build in my backyard. Mm. Right? It's the same thing. It's like, no, I don't want to pay more money. These ain't me. And that's why I always say, like, and there's a couple of podcasts I said, human are just very selfish, you know, species.
Yeah,
we care about us and the people around us first before we expand that circle outwards. And this is the result of it. And this is unfortunate, and this is getting really, really common in North America. Hopefully there will be an answer to deal with all of this, I guess.
Yeah. With that being said, we would like your take on it. Let us know what you thought about the news that we gathered today.
Yeah.
If we miss anything, please let us know. For next week's episode, we are very excited that we're going to be introducing our first interviewee. So make sure that you stay tuned and check us out on YouTube.
Yeah. And thank you so much. Help us with the algorithm, like, comment, subscribe. And we hope to see you guys next week with a different topic. Bye, guys. Here.